reports of Oppenheimer's visit with Tatlock, a known Communist Party member, made their way to Washington, and soon she was being described as a possible conduit for passing atomic secrets to Soviet intelligence. On August 27, 1943, in a memo justifying a wiretap on Tatlock's phone, the FBI suggested that Oppenheimer himself might either use her as a go-between or use her telephone from which to place important calls affecting the Comintern apparatus. On September 1, 1943, FBI Chief J. Edgar Hoover wrote the Attorney General that in connection with the Bureau's investigation of Soviet Comintern espionage agents, it has been determined that Jean Tatlock has become the paramour of an individual possessed of vital secret information regarding this nation's war effort. Hoover asserted that Tatlock was a contact of members of the Comintern apparatus in the San Francisco area, and it is reported that she is not only in a position to solicit secret information from the man with whom she associates, but is also in a position to pass the information on to espionage agents within the apparatus. Hoover recommended tapping her telephone for the purpose of determining the identities of espionage agents within the Comintern apparatus, and late that summer, one tap was installed by either Army Intelligence or the FBI. On June 29, 1943, just 2 weeks after Oppenheimer spent the night with Tatlock, Colonel Boris Pasch, chief of counterintelligence on the West Coast, wrote a memo to the Pentagon recommending that Oppenheimer be denied a security clearance and fired. Pasch reported that he had information that Oppenheimer may still be connected with the Communist Party. All of his evidence was circumstantial. He cited Oppenheimer's visit to Tatlock and a phone call Oppenheimer made to David Hawkins, a party member who has contacts with both Bernadette Doyle and Steve Nelson. Pasch believed that if Oppenheimer himself was not prepared to transmit scientific information directly to the party, he may be making that information available to his other contacts, who, in turn, may be furnishing knowledge about the Manhattan Project to the Soviet Union. Pasch naturally wondered whether Tatlock could be the conduit. He would also have learned from his FBI colleagues that, as late as August 1943, Tatlock was politically active in Communist Party affairs. In Pasch's mind, Tatlock was a prime spy suspect, and he was hoping that a wiretap on her phone would prove it. Short of that, Pasch intended to use the fact of Oppenheimer's relationship with Tatlock as a weapon against him. In late June, he marshaled his thoughts along these lines in a long memo to Grove's new security aide, Lieutenant Colonel John Lansdale, a smart 31-year-old lawyer from Cleveland. Pasch told Lansdale that if Oppenheimer could not be fired outright, he should be called to Washington and threatened in person with the Espionage Act and all its ramifications. He should be informed that military intelligence knew all about his Communist Party affiliations and that the government would not tolerate leaks of any kind to his friends in the party. Like General Groves, Pasch thought Oppenheimer's ambition and pride could be used to keep him in check. "It is the opinion of this office," Pasch wrote, "that subject's personal inclinations would be to protect his own future and reputation and the high degree of honor which would be his if his present work is successful, and, consequently, it is felt that he would lend every effort to cooperating with the government in any plan which would leave him in charge." By then, however, Lansdale had met Oppenheimer and, unlike Pasch, he liked and trusted him. But he also understood that while Oppie was a key man in the project, his political associations were troubling. Shortly after receiving Pasch's recommendations, Lansdale wrote Groves a concisely worded 2-page memo summarizing the evidence. Lansdale listed all the front groups, as defined by the FBI, Oppie had joined over the years, from the American Civil Liberties Union to the American Committee for Democracy and Intellectual Freedom. He cited his association and friendship with such known or suspected communists as William Snyderman, Steve Nelson, Dr. Hannah L. Peters, identified by Lansdale as organizer of the Doctors Branch, Professional Section, Communist Party, Alameda County, California, Isaac Folkoff, and such personal friends as Jean Tatlock, with whom Oppenheimer is alleged to have an illicit association, and Hoken Chevalier, believed to be a Communist Party member. Most damaging of all, Lansdale noted that Steve Nelson's assistant, Bernadette Doyle, is reported by a very reliable informant, i.e. a telephone intercept, to have referred to J.R. Oppenheimer and his brother, Frank, as being regularly registered within the Communist Party. Yet Lansdale did not recommend firing Oppenheimer. Instead, he advised Groves in July 1943, "You should tell Oppenheimer substantially that we know that the Communist Party is attempting to discover information about the Manhattan Project. Tell him," Lansdale wrote, "that we know who some of the traitors engaged in this activity are." Others, he noted, remained concealed, and for that reason the army was going to methodically remove any individuals from the project who seemed to be followers of the Communist Party line. There would be no mass discharges, only careful investigations based on substantial evidence. To this end, Lansdale wanted to use Oppenheimer. "He should be told that we have hesitated to take him into our confidence in this matter, because of his known interest in the Communist Party and his association with and friendship for certain members of the Communist Party." Lansdale seemed to think that this approach would encourage Oppenheimer to name names. In short, Lansdale was telling Groves that if he intended to keep Oppenheimer as his scientific director, he should press him to become an informer.